We are at the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, broadcasting the entire Hayes Advantage live today. Jim Bullard is my host. He's also my guest, as we have a wide-ranging interview, but mostly around this theme of quantitative easing, the Fed's bold move to buy long-term government bonds. Jim says, hey, look, don't get too excited. It's just another form of monetary policy, but it's a form of monetary policy the Fed has not practiced in a long, long time. And so markets, domestically, globally, policymakers, so much focus on this move now. Jim, a question I think a real basic, simple one is, what are you watching? What has to happen specifically to see more quantitative easing or less quantitative easing?
I think it's the pace of, that we're returning toward maximum sustainable employment and inflation closer to target. And for me, especially the inflation component of that.
So you would have to see inflation rising then to say no more.
Well, I'd like to see the disinflation trend stopped and have that turn around and start going back toward our implicit target of 2%. And, we're not aiming to create a lot of inflation, but we do have a disinflation trend right now.
Does unemployment have to start falling for the Fed to stop doing quantitative easing?
I think on unemployment, the best thing that we can do for the real economy over long periods of time is to provide a stable price environment and then let the markets sort out, employment, investment, consumption, and so on. That's long been the Fed's view on how we can contribute the best to meeting both sides of our dual mandate.
So do you expect quantitative easing to bring unemployment down?
Well, to the extent we can lower some real interest rates, which we have done with quantitative easing, that'll pull some consumption forward. It might get demand a little stronger than it otherwise would have been and might help us a little bit.
But you don't seem to be putting much emphasis on quantitative easing being an economic growth booster as much as a price stabilizer.
Yeah, I think that's right. I put more emphasis on the inflation side because that's what the Fed can affect over the longer term. And also I think a stable price environment allows markets to work most effectively, and in that sense you get the best outcomes for the real side.
And we raise the possibility of the Fed not doing the full $600 billion, state contingent, all that, right? Is there a possibility the Fed could do $600 billion, the full $600 billion, and then maybe even do more?
Well, state contingent is state contingent is state contingent. That means everything depends on data, how the data comes in, how the committee assesses progress towards its goals. So there's no sense in prejudging at this point, how that's going to unfold during the first half of next year.
But it's a possibility depending on the economy and inflation.
Oh, sure. Sure, absolutely.
Okay. What about the banks? I'm a bit confused reading Fed speeches, hearing them, listening to other Fed interviews, because I think a lot of people will say QE isn't working, quantitative easing, because banks still aren't lending very much. In your view, is quantitative easing supposed to get banks to lend more money?
Well, if you look at QE through the lens of reserves, then you're going to get reserves piling up in the banking system, and a lot of people have said, well, I don't think that that's going to have very much impact. So, but on the other hand, if you look at it through treasury markets, where you're an active player, the Fed is an active player in those markets, then you can have substantial impacts. And I think the financial market impacts have been pretty strong in the run-up to the November decision, which, as I was saying earlier, was all priced into the market ahead of time. You got lower real rates, weaker dollar, higher expected inflation, higher equity prices. Those are all very conventional financial market effects that you would get from an easing of monetary policy.
Let's turn to the European debt crisis, because you mentioned it in several speeches this year as a threat to the economy. Towards the end of the summer, it seemed you were indicating maybe it wasn't quite so much. It's flared up again. What role does it play in your thinking, in the Fed's thinking? Is this European debt crisis one of the reasons why the Fed figured, hey, it's time to do more quantitative easing?
Well, I don't think it was a huge factor in this particular move, but I do think that the European sovereign debt crisis will and I've been saying this for a while, is not something that was just going to go away. It was headlines in sort of the April, May, June timeframe, and then it sort of moved off the front page in the fall. But these countries are adopting fiscal retrenchment programs, and those programs take a long time to implement, a long time to follow through on, and markets are always testing those countries as to whether they're really going to follow through or not, and whether they're really going to get their fiscal house in order or not. And so that's not something that can just happen in a day or a week. It takes quarters and years. And so for that reason, I said that the sovereign debt crisis would be with us for some time, and I think that's true and will continue going forward until everybody really has their fiscal house in order.
And it is a threat to the U.S. economy, to this nascent recovery?
Well, that turmoil is severe enough that it can get severe enough that it can affect the whole global economy, and so that's why it's such an important issue for not just for the U.S., but everyone around the world.
Speaking of Europe,
I do think the Europeans have done a reasonably good job in containing the crisis and thinking about ways that they can unite and provide aid to particular countries. But of course, it's very contentious, and you're talking about bringing sovereign nations together to try to deal with the problem.
European Central Bank has a single mandate. Price stability. Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee came out today and said he thinks the Fed should have a single mandate, which is price stability. Would it make your job easier if the Fed also said that was it, just make sure you got price stability and don't worry about the rest?
Well, Senator Corker, of course, is from the 8th District in part. I think he's showing leadership on this issue. I think it's an interesting concept. I'm not sure how much difference it really makes at the end of the day, because really the only thing any central bank can do in the long run is control the long run rate of inflation. And so to the extent you have other mandates, what you're saying is that you're contributing to other parts of the mandate by providing a stable price backdrop for private markets to do their thing and get to equilibrium. So in Europe, they say, well, okay, it's price stability. And in a way, they're also saying that through price stability, they'll get the best private sector outcomes that they can. In the U.S., we have a dual mandate, but we also say, price stability leads to the best private sector outcomes that we can get.
Just a few seconds left here. What is your view? A year from now, what are we going to be saying about this economy, Jim? Where are we going to be? If I'm back here, what kind of interview are we going to be doing?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I actually think the economy will continue to improve. May surprise a bit on the upside compared to what some people have in mind. But you never know, and there's always going to be surprises around the corner.
Many thanks to Jim Bullard.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for coming. I really appreciate it.